guitar people, welcome to Have Guitar Will Travel, presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine, with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with singer, guitarist, icon, Rosie Flores. We spoke at Debussy Park Cafe a couple days before a performance at the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival. Sorry about the noise. In our conversation, Rosie tells us about her band in the 80s and her performances recently at the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival and how that led to her supporting Robert Plant for a tour this winter. Rosie describes her childhood and her musical education, learning from her older brother in San Diego and starting a band and opening for Creedence Clearwater and the Turtles by the time she was 18. Rosie takes us through her move to LA and her history at the Palomino Club, where she ran into and became friends with James Enfield, Dwight Yoakam, Albert Lee, John Jorgensen, Dale Watson, Buddy Miller, Jim Lauderdale, to name a few, and an encounter with Jeff Beck. Rosie discusses her guitars and amps throughout the years, Fenders, Gibsons, Voxes, Trussart, and now an Ibanez. Rosie talks about her new album, Rosie Flores and the Talisman, Impossible Frontiers, which will be available on vinyl. Rosie tells us about her jazz standards band, who played her 75th birthday party at the Baked Potato in LA, and Rosie talks about her contemporaries in other genres, Susie Quatro and Joan Jett. Rosie tells us about her guitar wish list and a Spanish language album she's working on now with Steve Berlin from Los Lobos. Finally, Rosie talks about still rocking at 75 and retirement, or lack of it. To find out more about Rosie, you can go to her website, rosieflores.com. That's RosieFlores.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Here's my friend Rosie.
It's an honor to meet you.
Thank you.
I saw you probably in the mid-80s at Slim's.
Oh my gosh.
And I can't remember exactly when it was, but you did it. I fell in love with you right there.
Aw. Well, I would have been with my LA band when I was playing Slim's. I lived in Los Angeles for a solid 15 years. I mean, moved up from San Diego to LA. Had great bands that I was touring with. If you saw me at Slim's, what was the date again?
It was in the mid 80s. I don't remember.
Yeah, it could have been my band that I had with Broly Sally on bass, because we were working up around this parts, and I would, you know, he plays with Chris Isaac.
Yeah.
And could have been Michael Sasaki on guitar. And it could have been Dennis Whitted on drums, who passed on. And then either that or it was my LA band. It could have been with Russell Scott and James Enfield. It could have been one of those rockabilly shows.
Yeah, so I think it was a rockabilly show.
Yeah, so we used to open for people like Rodney Crowell and Taj Mahal. And
yes.
I think I might have even opened for Emmylou there in the old days. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I did a lot of opening acts back in those days.
Sure.
Slim's was one of the best places to
play,
because you could play to a sellout audience as an opening act and sell merch and meet the artists. And that was a good era in my life.
Yeah. It's a shame it closed.
I know.
But things move on.
You gotta accept it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm learning.
Is this your first time playing at Hardly Strictly?
It's actually my second time.
Okay.
John Langford produced a record for me. John Langford, who you're familiar with through the Mekons. He also plays in the Waco Brothers.
Yeah.
And I think he's a regular here. And so he invited me to play with him and Sally Timms, because he had produced a record for me called Girl of the Century the summer before, and so he invited me to help promote the record. And we also were with, I can't believe I'm blanking on the name of the band that was helping back us. One of the guitar players passed on. Give me a minute and it'll come back to me.
Sure.
So that was about 7 years ago, and I was backstage and I was saying hello to my friend Buddy Miller, who plays guitar for Emmylou and everybody.
Yeah.
So I've known him since back in the days when I used to play at the Palomino Club.
Yeah.
And so he introduced me to Robert Plant, in short, and I was like, oh, wow, you know, and said hello to him, and who knew that, you know, 7 or 8 years later, Robert would be asking me to be his opening act for a month-long tour.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, of course, of course.
Yeah.
Talk about sellout shows. It's going to be...
Yeah, they're all sold out, apparently.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was a huge fan of Led Zeppelin, being a Jimmy Page fan. I wanted to be Jimmy Page when I was 15.
Sure.
But, and, you know, love the vocals of the Golden God and just all their songs. And it was cool to learn about them when I was young.
You grew up in San Antonio, or is that where you're...
We left when I was 11.
Okay.
And moved to San Diego, and that's when I became cool. Because that's when I started, you know, hanging around musicians and starting my own band when I was 16. My brother had a band, and so I learned how to play guitar with him, and I hung out at the beach, and I just stayed in my bedroom a lot. People always ask me, where did you learn to play guitar like that?
Yeah.
And I answer, it's in my bedroom. It's God's honest truth.
But who are your people? Besides your brother, who are your people that
There was another guitar player that went to high school. He was in my grade. His name was Paul Cowie, C-O-W-I-E. And Paul was in a band, you know, a high school band called the King Biscuit Blues Band.
Oh, wow.
They went on to become, you know, the hottest band in San Diego.
Okay.
And so Paul and I were good friends, and me and my brother and Paul would sit on the couch at Paul's mother's house and trade blues guitar licks. And so I was included in on the guitar club as a teenager. And at the time, I had never heard of another female playing the blues or electric guitar.
Sure, sure, sure.
And so my brother's band loaned us all of their gear, the amps, the drums, and the microphone, everything, so that we could be in the school show.
Oh, right on.
It was at Hale Junior High in San Diego, and my parents came, and we were so good. I think we only played 3 songs, and they were like kind of psychedelic. It was a psychedelic era. It was 1966.
Wow.
The Beatles were out, and the Stones and everything, and we loved Muddy Waters stuff. We loved the Everly Brothers, and sorry about all the coffee grinding noise. But you know, we forged ahead. It was an all-girl band. All the women in the band, the girls, were real studied players.
Uh-huh.
They had already been playing when I formed the band. I met them at the talent school tryouts and said, hey, if we can use my brother's gear, we could start an all-girl rock and roll. And they were like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
So we, Penelope's Children, stayed together for about, I guess it'd been about 5 years, and we ended up opening our first concert for Creedence Clearwater and the Turtles.
Damn.
When we were 18, two years later. We got a standing ovation from the audience. And it was a big, you know, concert arena in San Diego. And then we went on tour, and we got a VW bus that we owned, and we drove all the way to San Antonio, where I was from, and stayed with my aunt, and we played there for 2 weeks and got to be at this club that was known as the Pussycat, which was kind of like a rock and roll. I mean, if you were a touring band, that would be the place to stop in San Antonio.
Sure.
So we were on the bill we were there with Todd Rundgren's band, The Nazz.
Wow.
That was like back in those days.
Yeah.
So we did pretty good for just starting out, and there were some internal problems with, you know, personality-wise between me and the drummer, sadly. So, and then my guitar player, she broke her toe, so she couldn't go on tour. So I ended up finding some cool guys to be in a band with.
All right.
And then I went back to females many years later. There was a band in between, but the band that I played here in San Francisco with and toured America was the Screaming Sirens.
Okay.
And that was kind of a cowpunk band. And I wasn't the front person. I was a guitar player, but I did a lot of lead singing and songwriting for band.
Right, very good. Were you writing songs early on, like when you were first starting playing guitar? Were you writing songs?
I did. How can you not? You know, it's like you can help yourself. And so I was very poetic. I was a painter and an artist, you know, as a kid.
Yeah.
And I, you know, took special classes in high school and stuff. And I found myself writing poetry on the paintings. And I just kind of, because I was falling in love with playing guitar and being a singer, I just kind of stopped painting and just went 100% into learning to play the guitar and writing and singing. As I started taking guitar lessons and vocal lessons, my brother at the time, who's now living transgender instead of Roger and Marla, taught me so much about playing lead and how to move on stage and, you know, how to write choruses and bridges and, and here's how to do fills. And really, I mean, I had a mentor right the next bedroom over, you know, knock, 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 show me something else, you know. So, I saw her and I got some really cool songs that I think I'm going to record.
Oh, right on.
From her, and was trying to show me some new guitar patterns and stuff. She's got a very unique style of playing. Uh-huh. It's really cool. And so I have to say that I've had a lot of influence from early on Roger's guitar playing.
Yeah, exactly.
He was in a band at the time in Hollywood called the Killer Crows.
Oh, really?
And they kind of made a name for themselves in Hollywood. The lead singer was a woman named Texas Terry. So that's a little bit of my history from San Diego and L.A. right there.
And how early on did you go to the Palomino?
As soon as I could. I believe, so I moved there in 76. And I think the first night I could get my friends to go down there with me, I probably was there within the first week.
Okay.
Because I, you know, I was a really big fan of Linda Ronstadt. I was already singing her songs.
Yeah.
I had a band in San Diego called Rosie and the Screamers.
Okay.
Which was a club that Jack Temption owned. Jack Temption, you may not know, he's an unsung hero, but he wrote Peaceful Easy Feeling and Already Gone, and You Belong to the City.
And sure.
He's a tremendous songwriter. He owned this club. So we used to actually do a lot of his material. We did slow dancing before Johnny Rivers did.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that kind of pushed me into L.A. to want to, because I was so popular in San Diego from that, that I'm ready to move up to L.A. And so I had to start from scratch again and put a band together. And it took me 8 years before I got a record deal.
So did you move to L.A. solo?
All by myself.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
And my best friend moved there. She was a photographer. She was going to Art Center. She ended up photographing most of my album covers.
Okay.
Susan Malgin. And she's married to a comedian named Andy Kindler, and they were at my birthday show in L.A. last week.
Oh, very good.
And he got up and did 5 minutes of stand-up.
Oh.
It's just like, I just keep the same friends that I came up with. And but, you know, I moved, when I was in L.A. and I worked up there, finally getting my record deal in 1988, I guess it was. Uh-huh. Oh, no, 86, sorry.
Yeah.
And ended up being on the Billboard charts.
Yeah.
I was the first female Hispanic to be on the country Billboard charts. I keep saying that so people will remember. Because I'm kind of proud of that.
Of course,
you know?
Absolutely.
And the record company didn't make a big deal of it, but I did.
Yeah.
You know? And they didn't make a big deal about me being a lead guitar player either.
Yeah.
But I did.
Sure,
you know,
yeah,
I was like,
course.
Hey, that's me on that song.
Yeah.
You know, it's Billy Bremner from Rockpile and Greg Lees and me playing all the guitar parts. And, but nobody could really tell who was playing what, because I didn't really have a recognizable style. So a few records down the line when I was recording Bloodshot Records, I went into Minneapolis and I made a trio record with the same rhythm section that Brian Setzer used.
Oh, wow.
Tommy V and Noah Levy, drummer. And I'm the only guitar. I was like, I don't want any other guitar players. Yeah. I'm going to do everything. And after that, I started getting written up in all the guitar player magazines and stuff like that. So I was like, okay, that's what I had to do to make people pay attention to me. I mean, I'm no Grace, what's her name? What's her last name?
Grace Bowers.
I'm no Grace Bowers by any means. She's like surpassed me by years. But it's probably because she has more time on her hands as a child to just to shred in her bedroom. And I was just like, I never had the time. Although, I never gave up practicing. I'm trying to learn something new every day. Yeah. And I'm trying to study jazz because I want to try and write more songs for the... So I have two careers. I have the Blue Moon Jazz Quartet, and I have Rosie Flores and the Talisman. So one's a jazz combo that I only sing in. And I have two amazing guitar players, bass player. Jim Stringer is the guitar player. Lindsey Green is the other one. And John Flowers, incredible upright player. But for the Talisman, this record just came out. That's the one that just came out last Friday.
What's the name of the record?
It's called Impossible Frontiers.
Okay.
And it's on Mule Kick Records, a label.
Yeah.
Friends of mine have a label. Great label. And they're also, the girls that own the label are also responsible for working for the last 7 years to complete a documentary on the Palomino Club.
Oh, right on.
And that's about to come out.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I'm one of the stars in
it. Oh, of course, I got, as you should be.
Yeah, I got interviewed because, I mean, that was my home my home bar, you know. And
When you moved to L.A., were you living in the Valley or were you living in Hollywood?
I was living in kind of on the edge between in a place called Studio City.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of like the edge.
Yeah.
The edge there and the turning point. And so I hung around mostly in Hollywood. And my band, the Screaming Sirens, had a home in Hollywood. Most of them live near Hollywood. And the lead singer, Pleasant Gaiman, that was kind of the headquarters where her and her husband lived. A guy named Levi Dexter, who was in a rockabilly band called Levi and the Rock Cats.
Okay.
Spelled with a K-A-T-S. And so, you know, it was one big sort of babby family, all the musicians that used to gather there and everything. And they used to call the house Disgraceland. It was pretty disgraceful in there. Proper name.
When you were back when you were starting, when you're coming up, what kind of guitar were you playing?
Oh, God, I've had so many guitars, James. my first guitar in the school show was a Silvertone.
Okay.
And it was probably late 50s, early 60s style. I wish I still had it. But it belonged to my brother.
Oh, okay.
And the first guitar my father bought me was a Vox Teardrop, like Brian Jones.
Yeah.
And then I moved into a SG.
Oh, wow.
And then I was like, I want, you know, when I started playing in Rosie and the Screamers, my guitar player, is an amazing guitar player named Lee Barnes, took me to Hollywood and went to Norm's Rare Guitars.
Oh, yeah.
And he got me, I can't believe he got me a Super Reverb amp. I always needed somebody to help me put it in the back of my car.
Yes, of course.
But I had a black face. I got a really good deal on that. Really wish I still had it.
Yeah.
And I had a Strat. He got me a Strat. He goes, this will fit your body better.
Yeah.
But he was like, Bonnie Raitt plays this, and this would be a greater guitar for you to play solos on. So I moved into that, and for some reason, I played it well, but I kind of felt like I looked like a Bonnie Raitt copy.
Oh, okay.
And I even kind of looked like her at the time. I had the curly, long hair.
Yeah,
our hair was, like, identical. And people came up to me and go, you look like Bonnie Raitt. And I'm like, I know, and I play a Stratocaster too. And so it's a silly reason to switch over, but I switched over to a Les Paul.
Oh, wow.
And I got like a 75.
Oh, my God, a big, heavy Les Paul.
It was so heavy. It was beautiful sunburst.
Uh-huh.
And I, of course, got tired of it because of the weight.
Yeah.
And I switched it out. Let's see, what did I get after that? I might have gone back to a strap. I think I went back to the strap, but it was a lighter one.
Yeah.
And I forgot to mention that when in between Rosie and the Screamers and when I was still probably after my teardrop.
Okay.
There was a guitar player in town that wanted me to switch my SG model, which was really a Les Paul TV.
Yeah.
One pickup, white.
Oh, wow.
You know, one of those.
Yeah, like a SG Junior or Les Paul Junior.
I think it was like considered a Les Paul Junior. I have great pictures of me playing that.
Yeah.
And oh, of all the guitars, I wish I kept that.
Yeah.
And I played that in the Screaming Sirens for a while and ended up moving to another Strat after that. So, but this guy named David Flood, who was a guitar player and a woodworker, had a 58 gold top Les Paul.
Wow.
And he had taken, because they're heavy,
yeah.
He took the and grouted out the back so it would be light.
Yeah.
And he replaced it with a, you know, maple, beautifully done.
Okay.
But, you know, you wouldn't do that
to
a vintage guitar. And he also made the neck thinner.
Uh-huh.
He was trying, you know, we didn't know anything about vintage guitars in those days. So he made the neck thinner. And he said, oh, my God, the truss rod is starting to kind of choke through.
No.
So he filled that in. And so I traded the SG with him for the Les Paul. And I actually brought this. I had met Jeff Beck.
Yeah.
When I was 21, and I brought the guitar to here in San Francisco, and I wanted to get a different guitar. It had some tuning problems, and the neck was a little warped, as you could have imagined. And so I came to whatever that San Francisco music store was, the big one here. I don't even know if it's still here.
There was a few. There was Don Weir's Music City. Don Weir's Music City.
It could have been that.
There's Real Guitars. I don't know how long Real Guitars.
It was on Van Ness, maybe?
Van Ness.
It's been so many damn years, my brain. I can't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday. So anyway, I took it to the music store, and Jeff Beck seemed impressed with the guitar I had, or was telling him about it. I jammed with him backstage playing his Strat.
Wow.
When I was only 21.
Wow.
And I asked him to show me something on the guitar, and he says, what for? You know it all. So I carry that with me in my back pocket.
Yeah, of course.
I told the music store, I said, Jeff Beck offered me $1,000 for this guitar, which was a little white lie.
Uh-huh.
But they gave me two guitars. They gave me a Gibson 335.
Wow.
I'm not sure the model of it, but it was an SG. It was a maroon colored SG. So I got two guitars for the one. And I went home like so happy. And, you know, I mean, I think I traded one or two of those guitars for a beautiful Birdland guitar.
Oh, wow.
And then I was going, well, that neck's too short, and I didn't know anything. I should have started studying jazz guitar at that time in my life. So I have a lot of regrets for all the guitars I've gotten rid of.
And sure, as we all do.
Yes, and my new thing is to stop selling your guitars for rent. And all of my dear friends are like, next time you want to sell a guitar rent to pay your rent, would you please call me?
Yeah.
And if I do that, they'll put $500 in my account or something like that.
Oh, right on.
But I've been doing pretty good in the last couple of years, so I haven't had to sell any guitars.
Very good.
Yeah, so I've still got them.
Yeah. So do you, right now you're playing, do you still play the Telecaster, the blue Telecaster with the Bigsby?
That's my James Trussart.
Okay.
I love that guitar, and I'm probably taking it on tour with Robert Plant.
Okay.
Because it plays and sounds so amazing. But it weighs about 8 pounds.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the time I put it in the case with everything, it's 10 pounds on my shoulder. And you know how little I am. And I have shoulder problems. So up and down on the cruise ship, stairs, and through the airports, like sometimes I have to walk 20 gates and I'm all by myself. But I won't have that problem being in a van, and we're going to go 10,000 miles in a van touring with Plant, so I'll be able to take my Trussart.
Yes, of course.
But right now, I started taking it, I found it for about a year. I've been playing it. It weighs 4 pounds. It's an Ibanez. It looks like something AC/DC guy would play. It looks like a heavy metal guitar.
Sure. It's the one that's pinstriped, right?
I got it pinstriped at the car show,
Yeah, that's great.
And I had my friend put black and, because it's kind of champagne pink.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I normally play blue guitars, but I checked out both of the guitars, and the blue one didn't play as well as the pink one. The neck was just nicer, so I'm gonna play rose-colored guitars. And it started a trend, because somebody gave me a pink Strat.
Wow.
And that was a gift, so I've got, that one's called Barbie, and this one's called Rosetta, for Rosetta Tharpe.
Okay.
And then I have another pink guitar. So I've got 3 pink guitars, and I always said, I'm never gonna play a pink guitar, it's too girly. Nobody will take me serious, but they're taking me serious.
Right on, very good. What are you using for an amp right now?
I switched over to the Tone Meister.
Okay.
Tone Master, Tone Meister. Fender, it's a solid state, but I'll tell you, the best thing about that, I play the deluxe reverb style, and I can lift that thing no problem.
Yeah.
I only weigh 110 pounds, so I can't be picking up things that are...
Way more than you.
Yeah. I tried to pick up, you know, because I play the Super Reverb at the Continental Club in Austin.
Yeah.
I can't even pick it up.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I mean, I don't have any muscles. But I'm gonna try to start doing weightlifting at the gym. I just got a new membership, and I'm going to try to really, you know, I just turned 75, so I figure by the time I'm 80, yeah, I ought to be more like Popeye instead of olive oil. I'm going to try anyway.
Do you have a regular date at the Continental Club?
Actually, with the jazz group I do, every Tuesday, there's a Continental Gallery that's upstairs on the corner. You have to take a different door and a different admission to get upstairs. And Steve Wertheimer, the owner of the Continental Club, he's also, thank God, a fan of mine. So pretty much will give me dates when I need them.
Oh, right on.
But at this time, he also owns a really cool club called Seaboys Art and Soul.
Okay.
And so I just have to catch him in advance and go, you know, it's just time to book us again. You know, I don't like to overplay with that band in town too much.
Oh,
but, you know, it's so great to play. Mike Molnar is the guitar player.
Okay.
That most of the guitar playing on this new record is him.
Okay.
And he plays a Big Tex Tele.
Oh, wow.
And he was the one I got some information from. I can mention that to the listeners who are crazy about the new record. No, but he plays the Tone Master, but he plays the Twin.
Okay.
And he was the first one that turned me on to the Tone Masters. And
okay.
I was like,
very good.
That is so light, I'm going to get... So he plays that, and he played Victoria Tweed Deluxe style amp. And a Silverface Twin on a couple of things, too.
Okay.
I always play whatever's in the studio, which is mostly a deluxe reverb.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I'm almost, that's like my
favorite.
That's
the standards.
It really is. And I'll play, you know, the big one, Super Reverb.
Yeah.
As much as I can. He also played some acoustic guitar on the record, and he played a Waterloo Jumbo King.
Okay.
So I had him just do most of the acoustic rhythm on there. But yeah, he not only is he a great guitar player, but he's an innovative hook writer.
Sure, sure.
You know, he comes up with the most innovative hooks, totally unique stuff. You know, he just reaches outside of the box.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I have a great deal of respect for him, and you know, be able to co-produce with him, and he worked with Ed Stasium as well. And
wow.
We did the last four songs on the record. They're not the last four songs on the record, but the last four songs we recorded.
Okay.
Which is Dracula, Lines, which is the current single, Just Another Fool, and I Just Want to See You Again.
Okay.
And you can hear the big difference.
Sure, sure, sure.
In the production, you know, when you hear those songs. But I talked to Ed the other day, and he goes, you did a really good job of sequencing, putting my songs. He said, it just flows so great.
Yeah, yeah.
Giving me the thumbs up on that, so I was like, whew, I'm so glad he liked it, you know. But he gave the thumbs up on the test pressing. So it's coming out on vinyl, and should be out by the end of this month, right before the tour.
Yeah, so you have vinyl for the show.
Yeah, vinyl for the tour. And, you know, I've been trying to sell all my CDs through the last 3 years, and they're just not selling. You know, I might put 10 of them on the table and one or two might sell.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's
people
strange.
Just, and then yeah. I'll ask the audience, how many people out there have CD players? I said, I have a really good deal on CDs tonight. Two people will raise their hand. They don't put them in cars anymore.
No,
and so I didn't want to spend the extra money right now, because I want to spend money on buying t-shirts and other
of course.
Merchandise for the tour. So. But yeah, I mean, get a CD burner.
The jazz band, are you guys playing standards, or are you playing?
We have Jim Stringer wrote two of the songs on the record. I wish I could tell you when it's going to be released. Only thing I have to do is have it mastered. And I already have a couple labels that want to put it out. So
yeah, good.
I'm pretty close. After the Plant tour, maybe during it, I'll do business calls. But Jim wrote a song called My Apology, and he wrote one called Love or Infatuation. And those, he's just an incredible songwriter. He, of course, writes for pop, and he writes for country, and you know, he's just the most well-rounded guitar player in Austin. And he called me up one day and said, I love your voice, you're my favorite singer, and I love how your song, you recorded a couple jazz songs. And he said, do you want to start a group and do some Julie London songs? And
I'm like, right on.
I go, I've been dying to do that.
Yeah.
I was like, please. So we started that like going on 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
We've been playing the jazz clubs in Austin. So I was so excited to take my book and bring it to Los Angeles and hire some guys to back me on a show there at the Baked Potato.
Oh, right on.
So that is the oldest jazz club that I know of in LA. So I thought we did pretty good. I mean, it was a little scary because I had never even rehearsed with the guys.
Yeah.
But they were such pros. They did their homework, and we pulled it off. And people are like, wow, I love this, you know. And I'm like, okay, I'll be back to do more. But hopefully with my Austin guys.
Of course. The people you play with all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I love being in California because I had my birthday show in at that Baked Potato.
Uh-huh.
And then I got an award in San Diego the very next night for the, I got inducted into the San Diego Musicians Hall of Fame.
Oh, right on.
So that was like night after, and then the weekend after is Hardly Circuit Bluegrass.
Yeah,
so I'm like, I'm on a California roll right now.
Yeah. So, do you know a lot of the people that are playing at Hardly Strictly?
I know just about everybody.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, well, Emmy Lou Harris was singing harmonies with me on some of my early demo.
Right on.
Buddy Miller played with Jim Lauderdale, and he was his guitar player when I was kind of queen of the Palomino in those days. And I think Buddy and Jim came to the Palomino and saw me playing on stage with Greg Lease and Donald Lindley on the drums and these amazing musicians. And they were like, wow, LA's cool. That's a cool band. Let's move here.
Yeah.
So he took some of my musicians and started recording with them. And we were all just really good friends. It's like, at one point, we were all in the same band.
Oh, wow.
Sharing all the players.
Yeah,
And that's what happens. It's kind of like that in Austin now.
Uh-huh.
We share so many musicians. But my band, The Talisman, we've been playing with Mike Molnar, my drummer and singer, Chris Ensat, and the bass player who will be here, which is rare because he tours also with the Sleep at the Wheel.
Oh, wow.
A guy named Michael Archer.
Uh-huh.
So I'm so excited he's coming into town and we can actually be the real band on the record this weekend.
Yeah.
And he in between when things are, whenever he can, he'll play with us. So
yeah.
It's probably the best crack band I've ever had.
Right on.
And they're just great players and great guys. And I mean, I'm like a kid in a candy store waiting to do Ardley Strictly with them and have all my friends see me with that band.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Early on when you were at the Palomino, did you run into like Dale Watson?
I'll tell you what about Dale Watson. I'm the reason he moved to LA.
Okay.
He did not, when I met him, his girlfriend was a good friend of the Screaming Sirens. He later married Eve, but she goes, when we play in Houston, she'd go, you gotta come see my boyfriend. He's got the best voice and he's a great guitar player. And he used to wear this jacket that said, little man with a big voice. I wish I still had that jacket. He gave it to me.
Okay.
So I remember he invited me to play at the little honky tonk, and he backed me on some of my songs. And I stayed overnight in his apartment. He had my record cover on his wall, like a piece of art. And he had the smallest apartment that he had a walk-in closet. And that's where he put a double bed in there.
Okay.
And so he let me sleep in the closet. So I like to tell people, I spent the night in Dale Watson's closet. And him and Eve stayed on the couch. It was very sweet. And he would say things like, I'm never moving to LA. There's a bunch of phony people there.
Yeah.
I said, oh my God, you would love to play the Palomino. You would love to meet my boyfriend, James Infeld. You guys are birds of a feather. I go, just come and spend the night at my house. I'll sleep on the couch. You guys take my bed. And so he came and he realized that there was this whole scene going on there. So he moved there.
Oh, right on.
And I helped him and introduced him to musicians. And he thanks me all the time for getting him there. He said, if it wasn't for Rosie Flores, I'd still be playing in some cheap old honky-tonk in Houston.
Yeah.
But he ended up getting a record deal with Curb Records.
Uh-huh.
Because he's so good.
Yeah, exactly. He's very good.
He's amazing.
How about Dwight?
Dwight and I became friends at the Palomino.
Okay.
A really good friend of his brought him to come see me, so he would be in the audience, and I would talk to him, and I remember one of the first nights I met him, we sat in his El Camino black truck and listened to K-Fox radio.
Oh, wow.
And K-Fox, I think it was called K-Fox Radio, that all they played was old country music, like the good old stuff, you know? And he'd go, this is the kind of music they should be playing on country radio. And we were both like, yeah, we're going to, let's record that kind of music. Let's bring it back. And, we were really good friends. We hung out together for a few months.
Uh-huh.
And, he ended up getting signed to Warner Reprise.
Uh-huh.
And, he already had a little EP when they added more songs. Of course, I'm a Honky Tonk Man became number one, like, immediately.
Yeah.
But that same woman that signed him to Reprise is the same woman that signed me to the label.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, and they used to call me the female Dwight Yoakam. I said, well, the only thing we have in common is we both love Buck Owens and we both have really skinny legs. I always make people laugh with that, but I used to open for him and Buck.
Okay.
I've not been we kind of faded away.
Sure,
you know,
sure, sure, sure.
Friendship as he got to be the huge rock star he became.
Yeah.
And, but I do have a lot of respect for him, love his vocals,
yeah.
Friends with all the guys in his band.
Sure, you know, sure, sure.
Those guys I stay in touch with.
Yeah.
Eugene on the guitar.
Oh, yeah.
He's incredible.
He's very great.
Good friends, and his drummer, so. Who else did I meet in those early days?
Like, well, Marty Stewart, maybe?
I met Marty when I was, after I got signed to Warner Brothers, Reprise, I was nominated for Best New Female Vocalist.
Oh, wow.
Along with Pam Tillis.
Yeah.
And the girl that recorded Daddy's Hands, Holly Dunn.
Okay.
She took the award. But I got to be on this national TV show with, you know, I mean, look in the audience, there's Tammy Wynette and
yeah.
George Jones and Hank Williams Jr. and Carl Perkins. And so I could be on stage singing
yeah, yeah.
my song. And Loretta Lynn, you know, she was in the bathroom putting on makeup next to me, and I was so shy I couldn't even talk to her. And so I went backstage, and Marty Stewart came backstage with Manuel. I had never met him.
Uh-huh.
And they loved my style. I had like vintage cowboy boots on. I was the only vintage cowgirl on the show. And I had like kind of blue suede fringe dress. And when I was done with my little song, it was actually Vince Gill was singing the harmony.
Oh, wow.
And it was kind of like a demo that they were going to make a single out of.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of my show, I took my guitar pick and I flipped it up in the air. So everybody knew I had this like edge and this style. So they came back and went, we love the way you threw your pick up in the air, and we love your style. And so that's how I met Marty and Manuel.
Oh, right on.
We ended up making good friends
uh-huh.
after that.
Did Manuel ever make you some clothes?
Heck yes. if you look back on the first video, Crying Over You,
uh-huh.
that he made me that dress. It's
okay.
Red and turquoise and black
yeah.
suede with turquoise embroidered roses.
Yeah. So that's when Manuel was back on Lancashire, when he's still in California on Lancashire.
Yeah, he was it still Lancashire? He wasn't at, he had moved, Nudie had passed on,
uh-huh.
and he opened up his own shop. Was it still on Lancashire? It was way down toward Universal Studios.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was still Lancashire or if that was, God, I can't remember. I've been out of LA for so long. It could be Universal Studios
yeah.
Lane now or something.
Yeah.
But me and my girlfriends, he loved all the young girls.
Yeah. But
we would all hang out there and have tequila with him, and then we would go to the Palomino, or we would go to this Mexican restaurant where they had a live conjunto type band
uh-huh.
with the fiddles, and
oh yeah,
that was one of my favorite things to do
sure,
with him.
Sure.
And he would translate all the lyrics to
uh-huh.
the songs they were singing. I'm still studying Spanish, which I do have in the works. It's going to be bilingual. Type of record that I'm going to do half in Spanish. So
right on.
Working on that with Steve Berlin from Los Lobos.
So wow, right on.
That's going to be my next departure. And
yeah.
like the guy, Ronnie Mack, who introduced me, he goes, Rosie, you're just like Linda Ronstadt. You can't stay in one genre. And I'm like, exactly. She's my idol, you know. I'll never have that kind of voice, but I got my own voice and I got my own style. So
sure, sure, sure.
I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, so absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
Did you ever run into people like Susie Quattro or Joan Jett or any of those?
I wish I had met Susie Quattro. I never got to meet her, but adored her music and just remember thinking, wow, she's a rock and roll girl. I saw her on some TV shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And I used to love the way she dressed and her hairstyle. I'm like, I want that hairstyle. And
yeah.
And Joan Jett, you know, I always thought the Runaways were really cool, but then I always thought my old all-girl bands were cooler
yes,
than the
of
Runaways.
Course. Yeah.
I'm like, those girls are good, but she can't play lead guitar like me. And I was always like picking on her, but now I love her.
Uh-huh.
And I did meet her at Sirius Radio in New York.
Okay.
I got my picture taken. with her, but I lost that phone, so I never got the photo.
Oh, no, that's too bad.
I know, so I got to meet her again so I get my picture taken. Maybe this time she would have heard of me. I don't know.
That's great.
Yeah.
Are there guitars that you're interested in? And like, are there guitars that you for lack of a better term, lust after?
Oh, I love all the vintage stuff. You know, I did have a Les Paul that was given to me by Gibson. That was black. That's what it looked like, a Black Beauty.
Sure, sure.
But it was lighter, and it was a newer made guitar that was made in Japan.
Okay.
And I ended up, when I won the NEA award, the woman that helped me get it was a wonderful friend named Emily Marks. And she had a guitar school for girls. Uh-huh. When I first moved back to Austin, I worked with her, and she started Girls Rock Camp. She's always been a believer in me, and if it wasn't for her, I would never have gotten the NEA award. And so I gave that guitar to her as a thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
And she borrowed that guitar from me when she was in a Guns N' Roses, all-girl Guns N' Roses tribute band called Paradise Titty. So anyway, she's living in Memphis. She's not in a band anymore, but she does play. Uh-huh. So yeah, I gave her that. And so I'm lusting it. I would like to have, you know, a Black Beauty Les Paul guitar. I want every guitar that Brian Ray has.
Oh, wow.
I mean, when I saw that interview with him, and, you know, he's got a guitar-shaped swimming pool.
Yes, exactly.
I used to know him when he was really young, when he was playing with Eddie James. And, I mean, he did an interview, I'm sure you've seen it, where he brings out all his guitars.
Oh, yeah, Gibson TV, yes.
Yeah. And I'm like, I want every guitar he has. In fact, I just want to marry him, then I can have all his guitars.
That's great.
Yeah, so yeah, I lust after all the vintage, beautiful, beautiful stuff. And
Did you ever, at the Palomino, did you run into John Jorgensen?
John Jorgensen was in a rockabilly band when I was in Screaming Sirens.
Okay.
He played with Levi, my lead singer's husband. Yes. Levi and the Rockettes, and then he started a band with another great guitar player who was in the Helicasters with him, Jeff Ross. So Helicasters hadn't started yet, and my drummer Donald was part of the Helicasters. But yeah, Johnny was, I think he was just like 21 when I met him, and he had a bleach blonde pompadour.
Oh, wow.
And he used to wear like these shiny coats, and we're still really good friends.
Oh,
he's
very good.
One of the nicest people I've ever met. Uh-huh. And so is his wife Dixie, and I knew Dixie separate before they even met.
Okay.
And I was like, ah, damn, she got him. I was after him for a minute, you know. But yeah, he's played in bands with me early on, and he backed me when I became part of the Western Edge exhibit. Uh-huh. 3 years ago at the Country Music Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Do you know about that?
Uh-uh.
Yeah, check it out. They just closed the exhibit. It was only going to be up for 3 years. And so my window, I shared my window with the Desert Rose Band.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he had like a, you know, turquoise covered, was it Toltex or whatever? Toltex covered box amp in turquoise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he has a turquoise, not sure what guitar that was. I have a picture of it. We could look it up.
Probably the G&L guitar.
I think it was.
Yeah.
Like double cutaway.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, and then it had my red sparkle Telecaster.
Oh, right on.
And a vest and, you know, just some rosy memorabilia.
Yeah.
In the same window.
Yeah.
And so the exhibit starts out with, you know, Joe Mathis and, you know, the Rose Maddox and...
Yeah.
Maddox Brothers, and it just goes through all that LA country, and then it ends up with a sort of punk rock and country, you know, new country. Dwight's in there, and Dave Alvin has a window, and it was a great exhibit. I hate to see it go, but I also got a picture of the Screaming Sirens in there, too.
Oh, right on.
So, and it had Rank and File, the Long Riders, it had my favorite, one of my favorite bands with Maria McKee.
Yep, of course, Lone Justice.
The Lone Justice, that were kind of their posters in there. And so they gave all the bands, the LA bands, with posters and pictures on another window. So anyway, John backed me on that performance.
Oh, very
good. His band backed me, and we did. I did a Jack Kempchen song. I did Already Gone.
Wow.
And then I did my song Crying Over You.
Yeah, yeah.
And then James Enfield came on, and he actually sang harmony with me. And so, yeah, that was, I love Jorgensen. And he said the nicest thing to me the other day, and, you know, when he helped me find the jazz musicians for my Baked Potato show.
Okay.
And I go, well, I said, I'm really not ready to do all the guitar work in this jazz show. And I go, you know, I practice every day, John, and I'm still not the John Jorgensen player I wish I could. And he goes, you know, Rosie, you're doing everything right. And he goes, you keep at it. You know, there's nothing you could do to be better than you are. And you play every day, and that's all you got to worry about.
Exactly.
So I was like, aw, thank you. He's like, you got it, you know. Yeah.
And how long do you think you're going to continue on until you drop?
Yep. Well, you know, when I think about my age now, I mean, I feel and look pretty young. And when things happened to me like last night where I skidded on the stairs and bounced on my rump for 4 steps before I stopped, and I get up this morning and I'm like, I'm sore from falling down the stairs, and I go, you know, you probably need to slow down a little, because I've been on the road. This is going to be like a 3-week run, and you know, I think, you know, if I'm 80 years old, like, I know Paul McCartney's over 80, and I know Ringo is, and all the Stones, but they have caretakers,
yes, they do,
and they have a bus, and they don't have to lift anything, and they.
Well, they don't even have buses. They have jets that
fly
them home every night.
I'm sitting in the van every day. So I don't know if I'm going to be 80 years old doing this. I mean, who knows? There might be a new stem cell thing that makes people,
I'm hoping for that, too.
Yeah. I hear there's a new thing called NAD. I'm like, oh, should I get that? But I also, I'm writing a book.
Oh, good.
And I love writing.
Yeah.
And I love writing songs, and I love painting.
Yeah.
I went back to art.
Good.
And so I could see myself living in a really cool place with my paintbrushes and my recording setup and just doing stuff where I don't have to travel.
Sure.
Lifting my heavy Trussard or whatever. But if somebody wants to pay me well and fly me in and take care of me like a little old lady when I'm 80, if I still can sing.
You can. I'm sure you can.
I hope so. Well, I'm so amazed. People like Paul McCartney, they can sing like he does.
Oh, sure.
What a voice.
Yeah.
I'm just smitten with his talent, you know. Because when I saw him, he did 3 hours.
Yeah.
His band takes a break, and he keeps going.
Yeah.
So he's kind of my idol.
Very good.
And then a lot of people's idol.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. I really appreciate this time and letting me ask you questions.
Well, of course. I love promoting this new record. I can't wait for everybody to hear it and listen to, you know. Oh, the one song that I do trade licks with Mike Molnar is a song called Who's Looking for Me.
Okay.
And we do a really fun guitar trade at the end. And that's probably where I shine the best as a guitar player on the record, aside from writing half the songs you know, setting up the rhythm arrangements and stuff. But, I'll get back to more guitar playing on the one we're working on now.
So, very good.
Thanks for talking to me.
Yeah. If people want to get a hold of you, it's rosieflores.com.
Yeah, rosieflores.com, and there's a contact there. Also, if you go to Rosie Rockabilly Philly, that's my handle on both Facebook and Instagram.
Okay.
I have 2 Facebook pages. One is the, you know, the pro Rosie Flores and the Talisman.
Okay.
And the other one is just Rosie Flores. So I try to share on both of them. And Mule Kick Records, you can get in touch with me through them because they're kind of my label. They help with management and all that kind of stuff. So I'm pretty well taken care of all the way around.
Yes, you are. And congratulations on the Robert Plant tour. That's fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
As well as the records. But
thank you, James.
It's going to expose you to a whole new audience.
A whole new audience, I might have to order more LPs.
Yes, exactly. Or T-shirts for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely ordering more T-shirts. Yeah. I think if they're not already sold out, I have some cool Rosie fucking Flores T-shirts.
Very good.
My biggest seller.
Very good. Thank you very much.
You betcha.
Thanks for listening to Have Guitar, Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys. We'll be right back.